I thought, well, I started to think that maybe you were just like a madman with a box.
Amy Pond, there's something you better understand about me, because it's important. And one day, your life may depend on it. I am definitely a madman with a box.
I quite like the Space Museum. We are now at the end of the second series, and actually it's already become part of a museum itself.
Is it possible that somewhere out there, in the infinite reaches of space, a universe like eSpace exists?
Between two of his incarnations in a nebulous netherworld, he might possibly get a bit nasty and wear a black hat.
The Valiant.
Fire and Water presents Siskoid's Mad Theories, Episode 4. This is Mad Theories, and I'm Professor Siskoid. Today, November 23rd, 2017, we celebrate the 54th anniversary of Doctor Who, first aired on this date back in 1963. For the occasion, the Fire and Water Podcast Network asked listeners like you to ask difficult questions about the Good Doctor's adventures in time and space, and today we bring you the difficult answers. For this, I'm joined by two other members of the faculty, Professors Shag and Wayne. Take it away, Professor Shag.
Hi, folks. Professor Shag here, offering my contribution to Siskoid's Mad Theories to help celebrate Doctor Who's 54th birthday. All right, the question I'm going to be tackling comes from Alan W. Wright. He writes in, another fun puzzler for you. Who do you think all those images in The Brain of Morbius were? Pre-William Hartnell incarnations? The other? False illusions to trick Morbius into thinking he was winning? Or Morbius's past incarnations? Great question, Alan, that has plagued Doctor Who fans for 40 years. If you're not familiar with this one, folks, it comes from an episode called Brain of Morbius. It's from 1976 and starred Tom Baker, the Fourth Doctor. Now, in the final episode of the storyline, the Doctor challenges the evil Morbius to a mind-bending contest. It's Time Lord Brain versus Time Lord Brain. They grab a hold of this machine, this apparatus thing in a laboratory, and they begin, and there's the Doctor on one side, Morbius on the other, and in the center, there's a display screen. It begins to show images. It shows Morbius's brain, which was part of the story, and then you see Morbius's previous face, then you see the Doctor, and you see all three of the Doctor's previous incarnations. You see John Pertwee, you see Patrick Troughton, you see William Hartnell. Then after going through all of those, here's the weird part, you get to see a series of eight other faces that are shown before Morbius's brain casing sort of shorts out, and that's the story moves forward from there. It really gives the viewer the impression that these eight faces, people that you don't recognize, were previous lives of the Doctor. Morbius even says during the battle, he goes, how far, Doctor? How long have you lived? Again, you get the sense that these eight faces belong to the Doctor. But truthfully, behind the scenes, they're actually people that worked on the show. They include Christopher Baker, who was a 1970s production team member, Robert Holmes, which was a well-known script editor on the series, Graham Harper, who was a floor manager at that point, went on to direct several of the famous episodes, Douglas Campfield, who was a Doctor Who director for various older episodes, Philip Hinchcliffe himself, who was the producer of Doctor Who at the time, Robert Banks Stewart, who wrote Terror of the Zygons and Seat of Doom, George Galaccio, I probably said that wrong, who was a production unit manager, and Christopher Barry, another long-running Doctor Who director. So there you have it. These eight faces, the people that worked on the show. When producer Philip Hinchcliffe was asked, he said that they tried to get famous actors to do all these little faces, these little bit parts, but no one really wanted to volunteer for it, so they had to use folks from their own show. And he specifically said he was attempting to imply that William Hartnell was not the first Doctor. So this theory would be that there was eight other Doctors before William Hartnell. Kind of crazy. Now, to put this in perspective, at that point in history, they hadn't established that the Doctor only had 13 lives. That didn't come till four episodes later in The Deadly Assassin. So it was pretty much largely forgotten. I mean, people remembered it, people debated it, lots of theories we'll talk about in a moment, but most people didn't regard those previous faces as previous incarnations of the Doctor, which would make William Hartnell something like the Ninth Doctor. Now, as we go through these theories, let's be perfectly clear that no matter what we speculate here, the producer's intention was to show that these are previous incarnations of the Doctor before William Hartnell. That's immutable. So what follows benefits from 40 years of hindsight, further adventures, and retconning, and crazy fan theories. All right, folks, now let's break this down. Let's go through the common fan theories that you usually hear when people talk about the brain of Morbius. The first one, which is that possibly the faces weren't the Doctor's, but they were, in fact, Morbius's previous incarnations. You hear that one a lot. Doesn't really hold up, though, again, because Morbius even is talking about how long have you lived, Doctor. You really don't get that sense. Second common theory is that perhaps they're previous incarnations of the Doctor, prior to William Hartnell, the first Doctor. Again, that makes William Hartnell at least the ninth Doctor or later. That doesn't really hold up either, because later we find out about the 13 Doctor limit, which becomes a big issue with Matt Smith. So I think that one gets debunked, too. Third possible option is that it could be the Doctor's potential future incarnations. Could be. Nothing really to suggest that other than fans' guesswork. The fourth one. Some have speculated these faces represent other incarnations of a character called The Other. Again, this has nothing to do with the 1976 story. This has to do with hindsight and later stories retconning them. So, if you haven't heard of The Other, he was one of the founders of the Time Lord civilization, and according to Expanded Universe stories, the Doctor is actually a reincarnation of The Other. Breaking this down for you a little bit further, if you were a fan of Doctor Who in the 80s, you may recall there was an idea that was started in Remembrance of the Daleks, implying that the Doctor was actually a lot more important in Time Lord mythology than we were originally led to believe. This is commonly referred to as the Cartmel Master Plan, which was named after the script editor, Andrew Cartmel. Basically, what was going on is during the Sylvester McCoy years, the show's creators wanted to make the Doctor mysterious again. They felt like a lot of the mystery had gone out of the show. So they started suggesting again that he was a very important Time Lord, possibly dating back to the days of Rassilon. Well, when the series got canceled in 1989, they never really got to play out that whole storyline. So the Virgin New Adventures novels that were about Doctor Who, and specifically Sylvester McCoy, they picked up that idea and ran with it. And it culminated in a book called Lungbarrow. So basically where you stand with this is The Other, who stood alongside Rassilon and Omega as one of the founders of Time Lord Society, was eventually reincarnated into the Doctor. So the theory goes, going back to Brandon Morbius here, the theory goes that the faces seen while battling Morbius might actually be various incarnations of The Other. Kind of clever. Sort of fits with that, you know, with previous incarnations of the Doctor. However, this could be my memory playing tricks on me, folks, but my memory was, according to the novel Lungbarrow, that The Other didn't actually have the ability to regenerate. I believe he existed in a time before Time Lords could regenerate, because I want to say that it was later generations of Gallifreyans, the ones that were created from the looms, that had the ability to regenerate. I could be wrong. My memory might be off here. Doesn't really matter for where we're going with this, though. So those are the four common theories you hear a lot. Possibly Morbius's previous incarnations, possibly previous incarnations before William Hartnell, possibly future incarnations, possibly incarnations of The Other. Now, this is where we get into Professor Shagg's mad theory. I'm probably not the first one to come up with this theory, but it's the one I'm going with. In order to discuss this, we have to start with sort of a common frame of understanding. So I believe it's fair to say the Doctor has experienced many possible timelines throughout the history of the show. Entire experiences and entire timelines have been erased and rewritten as if they never happened. And yet, the Doctor often retains his memories of these temporal changes. Using a few examples for you. In The Day of the Daleks, John Pertwee, Third Doctor story. Sort of like a Terminator movie, these soldiers from the future come back in time to change the past. They end up creating some of their own future. But there's changes in this timeline which do create a new future. And yet, the Doctor remembers the original timeline that no longer exists and the current one. He retains memories of both. Jumping forward to Father's Day, a Christopher Eccleston Ninth Doctor story. In that one, Rose Tyler changes history by altering the timing of her father's death. Well, both the Doctor and Rose remember both timelines. Now let's jump forward even further to The Big Bang, which was an 11th Doctor Matt Smith story. In that one, they managed to rewrite the entire universe, and the Doctor, Amy, and Rory all retain their memories of both versions of history. And finally, I want to bring up one from the Expanded Universe, a novel called Interference Part 2. It was a novel from the BBC range. It featured both the 8th Doctor, Paul McGann, and the 3rd Doctor, John Pertwee. And in the story, this one takes place prior to the Planet of the Spiders, which is, of course, where the John Pertwee Doctor regenerates. So in this story, the 3rd Doctor comes up against this time-traveling cult who worships paradoxes. And in the story, the 3rd Doctor is actually shot with a shotgun and regenerates on this planet called Dust. So he doesn't regenerate, as we all know, in Planet of the Spiders. He regenerates before that on Dust rather than on Earth after battling the giant spiders on Metabolus 3. And in the process, his history is rewritten and altered, and he gets this virus too. That's part of the story. But either way, both the original timeline that we all watched on TV and this new timeline both continue to exist. So in all of these examples, there are changes to history, and yet people remember the changes. So I propose that the eight faces in the brain of Morbius, mind-bending battle, were actually versions of the Doctor himself from parallel timelines that either were erased or prevented from ever existing, essentially alternate versions of the Doctor's first four incarnations. I know, totally a mad theory, but some of you might argue that the Doctor's appearances have always been predetermined, like the Eighth Doctor was always destined to look like Paul McGann or something like that. And certainly some of the books kind of even suggested that. I disagree. I believe the Doctor's appearance could be very different if he regenerated at a different time. For example, the Second Doctor in War Games, the Time Lords actually offer him options as to what his regeneration might look like. And the Peter Capaldi's Doctor acknowledges that he subconsciously picked out that particular face after meeting the character Peter Capaldi played in the 10th Doctor episode, The Fires of Pompeii. So that face was dependent upon experience, not his DNA. So, essentially, alternate versions of the Doctor's first four incarnations that were never allowed to exist. That's the theory I'm putting forward. Here's a little something more to chew on here. During the Time War, you know, this great Time War with the Gallifreyans and the Daleks, we know history was getting written and rewritten over and over and over. Let's just suppose for a moment that the Doctor's timeline was also rewritten at some point. Mad theory time. What if the Doctor kept refusing to fight in the Time War, no matter what? Meaning that the John Hurt Doctor never came to be and never agreed to fight in the Time War. Do you really think the Time Lords would be okay with that? Are they just going to sit back and let the Doctor sit out of it? I don't think they would. Perhaps the Time Lords purposely wiped out the previous incarnations of the Doctor, changing his personal history, and thus changing the people he regenerated into, basically customizing their own version of the Doctor, wiping out versions of him over and over until they got to a timeline where he would eventually regenerate into the War Doctor and fight on their side. Whoa! Yeah, I think the Time Lords would be willing to do that in the midst of that war. Think about it. During the Peter Capaldi episode, Heaven Sent, the Time Lords caused the Doctor to keep dying over and over and over just in an effort to get information from him. And that went on for, what, millions or billions of years? So I'm sure they would have been willing to rewrite the Doctor's history to ensure his health. So, what if those eight faces in the brain of Morbius are the past Doctors before the Time War? And after the Time War, the Doctor had a completely different set of faces. Whoa, crazy! I realize this is a total retcon, using the benefit of 40 years of subsequent adventures to explain something from 1976. However, it does sort of keep with the producer's original intention. These would still be previous incarnations of the Doctor. It sort of works. So, thanks for this opportunity to contribute to Siskoid's mad theories. This is Professor Shag saying, happy 54th birthday, Doctor Who. You don't look a day over 1200.
Hi, I'm back. Adam Ackerman asks, did the Sontarans actually invade Gallifrey in The Invasion of Time? If the Doctor used the DMAT gun on Commander Store, erasing him from time, could the events have happened? So then, where is Leela, and what model of K-9 is in the Rebos operation? Well, some context is needed here for those of you who do not remember the DMAT gun. In the story Adam references, the Sontaran commander, Storr, is about to destroy the galaxy and wipe out the Time Lords. The Doctor has no choice and fires the DMAT gun, an ancient Time Lord weapon that is so dangerous it can only be activated with the Key of Rassilon, which is itself rather hard to get a hold of. The device, and I'm going to go with its description from the Faction Paradox guidebook, The Book of War, here is a super powerful quantum computer linked to Gallifrey's causal nexus. It would scan its target and read their complete timeline, identifying every particle that ever interacted with the target's body. It would then remodel everything else in creation without the target. From the user's perspective, the machine didn't harm anything. But from the victim's point of view, they were suddenly built out of molecules that the universe didn't remember. But if Storr ceases to exist, does that really change history? Not necessarily. Storr and the particular circumstances of his actions, up to and including his threatening the galaxy, are erased. But the Sontaran High Command still sends troops to Gallifrey. They just happen to be led by someone else, someone who is defeated rather more easily. Look at the changes we see on screen after the gun is used. Storr is gone, but so is the DMAD gun. And no one cares to mention the two Sontaran troopers lost in the TARDIS' bowels, nor the Sontaran fleet ever again. So, however the Sontarans were defeated, it sends them packing. Or perhaps they were time-looped, which was the plan for the Vardans, who were simply acting as a spearhead for the Suntarans. It must happen after the chase inside the TARDIS because that's where Leela, Barusa, and Spandrel are when the Doctor finds them. The Doctor's amnesia is a result of interaction with Rassilonian artifacts, not changes to the timeline, because the others remember everything. The memory loss is merely a failsafe to guard against anyone building the DMAT gun ever again. Now, even if we'd like to think that Leela and Barusa are protected from changes in the timeline by being inside a TARDIS during the erased events, the same way the characters in Shag's examples were in the previous segment, it's giving Storr too much credit. The universe just abhors a paradox, and so most of this history must happen. Indeed, the Doctor's presidency is referenced again and again across the whole of the classic era. He remembers the presidential code that opens doors in Ark of Infinity, so the memories either later return, or he's lying about not remembering anything, so that the Time Lords don't know he has access to all this privileged and dangerous information. That sounds like him. The Vardens, the presidency, Leela's odd romance, her inheritance of K-9, all of it happens, for good or ill. I now hand over the reins of the show to the esteemed Professor Nathaniel Wayne to answer Clinton Robison's question, how was Romana able to pick her appearance upon regeneration? That's coming up next on Mad Theories.
So today we shall be discussing a curious case of regeneration, that of Romana Dvor Trelandar, a.k.a. Fred, a.k.a. Romana, first appearing in the story The Rebos Operation, played by Mary Tam. The following season of Doctor Who, she was replaced by Lala Ward in what has become a highly anomalous instance of Time Lord regeneration. For those not fully versed in the annals of Doctor Who, in the story Destiny of the Daleks, Lala Ward appears for the first time as Romana. This causes the Doctor some dismay, because she's taken on the appearance of one Princess Astra from the previous story, The Armageddon Factor. He insists that she not take a body that belongs to someone else. Romana then proceeds to leave and return in four different bodies in the manner one might try on different outfits before finally returning once more in the form of Princess Astra, which is the form she then stays in. This contradicts much of what has been seen in Time Lord Regenerations, both before and since. And we shall now attempt to parse out an explanation as to why that would be the case. First, let us briefly acknowledge the meta reason for this, which is that Mary Tam chose to leave the part after dissatisfaction with the direction she felt the character was going. She offered to return to film a regeneration scene. She was not invited to do so. Stories that she could not film the scene because of pregnancy have been discredited. The real world reason that this scene exists is most likely because science fiction writer and humorist Douglas Adams had recently taken on story editor duties for the show and likely added the scene for its comedic value alone. But that's the boring explanation. So instead, let us dig into whether or not this can be given an in-universe explanation. Please understand that I shall be referencing only what has appeared in the show proper and not bringing in possible factors only alluded to or provided in ancillary material such as novels, comic books, or audio dramas, due to the fact that exactly how much of such material can be considered legitimately canon is not entirely clear. Traditionally, both before and after Romana's regeneration, which we are now discussing, the form taken immediately following that regeneration was shown to be something that Time Lords had limited to no conscious control over. The Doctor often appears surprised by his new body or expresses distress that some things don't turn out as he would have preferred, such as still not being Ginger. This inability to completely control regeneration is backed up by other regenerations seen in the show, such as that of the Time Lord General in Hellbent, where upon regenerating as a woman after having been a man, she asked, "Back to normal, am I?" in a tone that implies she's seeking confirmation to be sure of her current body. There has been some degree of implied control, such as when the Master desires to be younger, when he regenerates from Derek Jacobi into John Sim, or when Melody says she's focusing on a dress size when she regenerates into River Song. But these are nowhere near the level of control that Romana demonstrates. There are several possibilities as to how Romana is able to exert much greater control over her regeneration. She may simply be better at it than other Time Lords that we've seen regenerate. It may be some sort of specialization that she completed additional training in during her education. The issue with this theory is that the Doctor himself tells her to go off and try other bodies. Prior to this, the Doctor had been blatantly insecure in instances where Romana's knowledge or skill exceeded his own, making it very out of character that he would so casually invite her to basically show him up like that, especially in front of their shared companion, K-9. This makes this possible answer, while not impossible, rather unlikely. It is also possible that she may, in fact, actually be expending a regeneration every single time she leaves and comes back in another body. However, given that Time Lords are limited to 12 regenerations, failing at some form of intervention by the ruling bodies, this would be extraordinarily wasteful for her to do. Especially since, by the end, it seems fairly clear she was doing it all largely to push the Doctor's buttons. It is possible that each new body is not in fact real, but simply some form of projection of a possible option that Romana is presenting to the Doctor, possibly through the aid of equipment on the TARDIS. However, even if this is the case, it only accounts for her not having to expend a regeneration for each new body she appears in. It does not address how she is ultimately able to have complete conscious control over her choice. The major X factor in all of this is that we never are let in as to why Romana regenerates in the first place. And perhaps there is where we will find our answer. Generally speaking, every other regeneration that has been seen on Doctor Who has been undergone because the Time Lord in question would otherwise die, be it from old age, poison, a fall from a great height, or being gunned down in an alley. Regeneration is reserved for when there is no possible way to keep the existing body going. Except for one other time. Remember that the Second Doctor was forced into regeneration by the Time Lords as part of his punishment for his violation of their laws. Prior to his change from the form of Patrick Troughton into Jon Pertwee, the Time Lords present the Doctor with specific choices, hinting at the ability to completely control the final outcome. The Doctor refuses to pick, and they ultimately decide for him, but what makes this special is that it's not a case of the old body giving out. This is instead a regeneration that is triggered by the Time Lords themselves, and would appear to indicate that when the regeneration is initiated by Time Lords rather than the result of imminent death, that those are the circumstances under which complete control is possible. Therefore, Romana must have undergone regeneration completely, voluntarily, and not due to some outside force or need. While I do maintain that she is not so fickle as to burn through a regeneration for each body we see her try on, let us not forget that she is indicated to be relatively young and inexperienced in real-world matters, and likely in her first body when she first joins the Doctor. It seems not unreasonable to make the leap that a young person would expend a single regeneration for the opportunity to choose a new body, to have that degree of control at least once in her many lives. And let us not forget that given her first appearance in the form of Princess Astra in this new regeneration, she appears to indicate that she had some degree of being enamored with this particular body from before. And I feel that I can safely conclude that Romana, upon seeing and meeting Princess Astra, knowing that they would not travel back to the world where she existed, decided that it was worth the cost at least this one time to regenerate voluntarily in order to have full control over her final form. This concludes the lesson. Further readings and lectures can be found on the Council of Geeks YouTube channel.
Professor Siskoid again, leaving no one behind and no stone unturned. Welcome to the lightning round, in which every other question asked gets a short answer. Watch out for the cloister bells. Alan W. Wright asks if the timeline is forever shifting. Amy not knowing the Daleks from the Stolen Earth, for example. What do the Doctor's past companions remember? Are their memories updated? Do they remember both how they experienced events with the Doctor and how everyone else remembers them? Well, the TARDIS's telepathic field protects your memories from temporal shift, Alan. Basically, if you're plugged into the telepathic circuits and benefit from instant translation, your memories should be protected and perhaps continually saved and re-uploaded by the TARDIS itself. Only a Time Lord might remember several timelines and keep them straight. Humans retain only one in memory. Alan also mentions a book that said Ian and Barbara really wrote the Peter Cushing movies as warnings to people about the Dalek threat. If so, how would that work? Wouldn't people just assume that the real Daleks were just cosplaying these movie villains? Well, sorry, Alan. That is only a fan theory that has never, to my knowledge, been referenced in any of the extra canon. It's no more credible than Cushing's own theory that he was a future incarnation of the Doctor forced to relive past adventures by someone like the Celestial Toymaker. The extra canon only ever mentions the Cushing films as a parallel history, not a part of the true timeline. Adam Ackerman wants to know why the Doctor stopped being a vegetarian. As the 11th Hour proves, a new body comes with new taste buds and cravings, so the change may be biological. Of course, personality and experience are part of the equation too. After the 6th Doctor becomes a vegetarian, he's not seen eating meat again until his 9th incarnation, except in a 6th Doctor comic strip called Salad Days, in which he and Perry go for burgers and chips after an Alice in Wonderland type adventure featuring such foes as the Queen of Artichokes and the King and Knave of Spuds. Patrick Delmore asks, why didn't we see the 2nd Doctor become the 3rd Doctor? Well, that's easy. While most people put Season 6B in this slot, including writer Robert Holmes, as the 2nd Doctor is sent on missions for the Celestial Intervention Agency, including his appearances in the 3 Doctors, the 5 Doctors, and the 2 Doctors, giving him many more stories before he actually has to regenerate, those stories' use and references to certain companions actually mean Season 6B features him being taken out of time at different times across his whole incarnation. This is corroborated by the audio drama The Black Hole. So I will say, the Doctor was actually put in stasis by the CIA, so they'd have a default version of the Doctor's mind on hand to rewrite his brain after every Season 6B adventure, so he would never remember them, but his memory would seem continuous. The 2nd Doctor's exile on Earth was told in the TV comic strips, which end with him being dragged away by animated scarecrows who force him to regenerate. The Time Lords then edit his memory one last time, cue Spearhead from Space. Then Pat Sampson says, his difficult question about Doctor Who is where to begin watching, from the beginning or the newer seasons? Well, the obvious answers are with Rose, since Russell T. Davies builds that first season as a primer for new viewers. The 11th Hour is a better story and also serves as a great introduction. Starting from the very beginning can be more frustrating because there are 6 years of black and white, and to some, dated television, with many episodes missing from the catalog. So while you watch the new series, and do, I also recommend sampling the better stories from each past Doctor to see which eras of the show you might enjoy. For example, the Aztecs or the Romans for the 1st Doctor, Tomb of the Cybermen and the Invasion for the 2nd, Doctor Who and the Silurians and the Daemons, perhaps, for the 3rd, Pyramids of Mars and City of Death for the 4th Doctor. For the 5th, I'd say Kinda and Enlightenment. Vengeance on Varos for the 6th. The Curse of Fenric for the 7th. Then go on from there. So you can watch Doctor Who as a continuous story. Or you can watch it like you would a snowflake, branching out in different directions simultaneously. Zumyukinori wants to know who killed the half-faced clockwork android cyborg in Deep Breath. The 12th Doctor, or the half-faced clockwork android cyborg? Well, the way the Doctor looks into camera, he did it. He dares you to judge him. Paul Hicks asks, with monsters showing up in Doctor Who, what is the sweet spot with appearance numbers where they have had their mythos sufficiently enriched, but before they are diminished as a threat? Exactly twice, Paul, which is why the Draconians are still so awesome. Clinton Robison has another one. What exactly is e-space and can such a thing exist? Script editor and writer Christopher Bidmead prides himself on the boring math and science he injected into Doctor Who in the early 80s, so yes, e-space is a thing, if you believe, as you must, in a quantum universe. Check out the Full Circle DVD, which has a documentary on this very question. Finally, Alan W. Wright returns and sends us this Patrick Troughton quote. Goes, "Well, I thought we had to do something a bit different. My original idea was to black up and wear a big turban and brass earrings and a big gray beard and do it like the Arabian Nights. I thought that would be a wonderful idea, but when I'd finished, I could shave off, take the black off, take the turban off, and nobody would know who I was and I wouldn't be typecast, but they didn't think that was a very good idea." Now, Alan asks, "How long do you think the show would have lasted if they had gone with this original idea?" I think even if it ran the full 26 years, it would certainly have been rebooted in 1996 or 2005. I couldn't imagine 21st century doctors being depicted next to this. And also, as much of later doctors borrowed from the cosmic hobo version of Troughton, what kind of template would the sea captain have set? Oh, unfortunately, we're out of time. So there you are, answers to your questions. Agree or disagree? Let us know what you think at fireandwaterpodcast.com. And have a good Hooniversary.